Welcome to Business Jazz with Paul Omani and Roger Overall. The podcast about how to be genuinely attractive in business today.
Welcome to Business Jazz, the podcast about how to be genuinely attractive in business today. We're here at the Republic of Work, as we usually are, which is great. Opposite me is Paul. Paul, who are you? Tell people who you are.
I'm an Irish guy born in Limerick who spent 30 years in the UK and is still in business. And I am somebody who has really enjoyed making this podcast with you and who hopes that this particular podcast will help people in business, no matter whether they're an employee or whether they are a business owner. And have I spoken for long enough now, Roger, to give you to give us a good start?
I think so.
Or should I speak more
less
often?
I think you've spoken plenty. So, just as a little disclaimer, this is a Friday. We normally record on a Tuesday, and we did record on a Tuesday, except we only recorded one of us on Tuesday, and that was Paul's channel. My channel, there was nothing that were other than interference. There was very little of my voice, so we are re-recording. So the big question is, are we going to try and relive the podcast that we had on Tuesday? Are we going to...
Definitely not. That would really stretch me, and then I'd have to be... No. We're going to. This is fresh. This is fresh. New. I'm afraid
that's
all
lost.
That's lost forever. That was actually the best episode we ever recorded.
I thought so.
But you know what? There are businesses out there who have technical disasters, and in fact, there are businesses whose entire production process is brought to the knees through an event which they didn't anticipate. And you know, you have to pick yourself up and carry on. So we have to pick ourselves up from our disaster on Tuesday and come back fighting on Friday.
Well, we're very lucky in a way because, okay, we had a disaster. There's an episode that will now never be heard. We heard it, so it was fine for us. And people, if we'd said nothing, would never have known there was another episode in existence, the missing episode, as it will now be known as. But there are businesses when something does go catastrophically wrong that you can't step over it as easily as we can. We can say, look, we'll meet again on Friday and we'll record another episode. Easy peasy. What do you do when you're a business and you screw up so badly and you can't do it again? I mean, that's a different proposition altogether. How can you remain genuinely attractive after such a disaster?
Actually, there's loads of evidence that when things go wrong, provided you recover well, you become, if anything, more attractive, because people then, one, think that you're human, you do make mistakes, we all know technology fails, we might all think that, you know, technology failures involve human failures somewhere back along the line, but it's how you recover. And we've had episodes on this podcast where we've talked about a waiter who dropped a whole bowl of soup on top of somebody or spilled a bottle of wine. But because the way in which they recovered from that situation, the customers came back.
I think there is that. I think there's also the very... You can just take a step back and make it very human to begin with straight away and say, well, I have screwed up and the client is not going to be happy, and then your mind can take over and your fantasy can take over and your imagination can take over and you can imagine the worst response possible from your client, and that will escalate. It will end in catastrophe. You're going to be sued, you'll never work again, you'll lose your house, your children won't speak to you anymore, your dog won't recognize you. It's going to be that level of a disaster. The world will literally stop spinning. And I think an important thing is to take a breath and realize that actually your client is a human being as well. And that if you speak to them and you communicate with them, you talk to them and say, well, look, this is what happened, this went wrong, I know why it went wrong, it's all my fault, I own it, etc., etc., that you will be surprised often that the reaction may not be one of anger and disappointment and bitter recrimination, but there may be understanding. I remember my dad telling me once, my father lives in America, and he used to work for a company, and he screwed up. He would be the person who checks contracts on massive building projects.
And he got the contract wrong.
Well, he got something wrong, and it cost the company money. And he said to him, I remember him telling me, and this was soon after it happened, and this was a man quite advanced in his career when this happened, and he said to me, I've never done this before, but I couldn't hide it, so I had to own up to it because it was a lot of money and it was a big mistake and there was no way that I could rationale or reason it away. I just made a mistake. And he said, you know what? My boss sat me down and he said, well, that happens. So what are we going to do about it? And he moved straight on from the problem, straight away, to the solution phase. And that always stuck with me because I thought, what a great way to deal with that. Because it has two things, at least two things to my mind. One, the employee doesn't feel like total crap. It doesn't feel like that their career is over. It doesn't feel so horrible that they stop functioning as a human being because they're carrying all this guilt and there's all this recrimination coming their way. So my dad was able to continue working and functioning to his best level. Now that's one benefit to the company straight away. They haven't lost an employee's input, if you like, or it hasn't diminished. In fact, probably because of the response he got, he worked a bit harder. Now the other thing for the company that struck me as being as an attractive thing of this whole way of doing it is you don't waste any energy. There's no energy is wasted on feeling bad, shouting, recriminations, this is awful, this is terrible, and now we're not talking to each other for several days. There's no energy is wasted on that. All the energy is directed straight away to, well, how can we solve this? What can we do to make sure that the impact is limited? I thought that was really, and he'd never experienced that before in any of his jobs. And like I say, he would have been in his 40s when this happened. And to experience your whole life up until your mid-40s, where if you made a mistake, it was the gallows, or it was the torture chamber, or it was the door, whichever of those.
People talk, of course, very fashionable, talk about a no-blame culture. I remember when that was spoken about very often. So indeed, you know, it isn't universal experience of people that they won't be blamed. See, and when you're blamed, your ability to either continue in that business or your ability to remain motivated reduces. But it struck me while you were talking there that there are three valuable questions that need to be asked when something goes wrong. And these could be applied no matter whether you're Microsoft and you're dealing with the fact that somebody's got into your software through a hole you left in the system, and you're universally criticized because if you had plugged that hole, their business wouldn't have been distracted from its main course. And the three questions are these, I think. Why did this happen? Mm-hmm. Now, unless you actually address that question, you are not going to be able to ensure it doesn't happen again. So why did this happen, number one? Number two is, what have we learned, or what have you learned from what has gone wrong? And that's vital again, because everything is a continuous process of learning. And if, for example, it is an individual or a team that has caused or being the primary cause of something going wrong, very important question to ask them now. What have you people learned from what has happened? We know why it happened.
Well, here.
And now we need to know what have you learned. So and after you've spoken, I have the final punch question.
You have the final one. Yes, you do have the third one, but I just wanted to jump in there because I just want to relate it to our podcast. So why did it happen? Well, we have a faulty piece of kit. That's one part of that answer. Why did it happen? Well, we weren't monitoring the audio. That's the other thing. That's the other why. Because if we'd been monitoring the audio, we would have caught the problem much sooner. Therefore, we could have rectified the problem sooner. Therefore, we would have a podcast. So that's two parts to that answer.
Actually, we also had an intermittent fault because it worked when we checked at the beginning.
That is correct.
So simply checking your process at the beginning and doing nothing while the process is going on is highly risky.
It is. It's almost the same as you post something, so you're in control at the beginning, and then you don't see it. It magically goes down this hole somewhere, and it pops out somewhere. You hope. Then to the second part, you know, what did we learn? What are we doing differently? Well, just sitting here, I must look a little bit strange because I've got so many wires hanging off me. It's ridiculous. But one of them is my iPhone headset because I'm monitoring the audio throughout the whole conversation now. So that's different. That's something I've learned. Monitor the whole conversation.
So your eyes aren't just on me, or is it your ears through which, when you're doing a podcast? So is that why when people do podcasts, I've often wondered about this, they wear headphones?
Yes, I think that's probably why they do. So they're monitoring the audio. And it may not even be both of them. It may be one of them, but it'd be certainly... I've seen it done, the person in charge of the recording, if they're talking away in the recording as well. It's a good way for them to hear exactly what's going on. Or if you can stretch to having a third party sitting in the corner who's just monitoring everything, then they'll have the headset on. And in terms of the way we're doing it, I'm just hearing both our voices now. I'm hearing the entire recorded track as it's being recorded. So I can actually tell you that based on what I'm hearing, we have pristine audio for this podcast so far.
That is very good advice for anybody doing a podcast. Now the third question is one that you've touched on already, and it's the one that you were extolling as the really valuable one that doesn't waste time, and it is, how do we move on? So what is our action plan? Now that we know the cause of the problem, now that we've learnt something, how do we move on? Now, if you move on before you know what has caused the problem, what do you think is likely to happen?
Oh, it's going to happen again and again.
That was a rhetorical question.
Well, it wasn't even...
I do think everybody who's listening to this knew the right answer.
Well, yes, they may have known the right answer, but would they have acted upon it? Because, cast your mind back to last week, where we also had some issues with the audio. Now, that week it was salvageable. But it's the same. I can now see that it's the same issue. It's just it was at an earlier stage of the deterioration of this microphone. So... yes, it's very easy to say, well, you know, you can't move on if you haven't learned it. Well, yes, everybody might say, well, of course you can't.
So we did move on.
We did. So it's, on one hand, it's very easy to say...
before we really had done our proper...
Yeah. So you can say, well, it's a rhetorical question. Everybody gets that. And everybody listening is going, of course you wouldn't.
The theory is, of course, different from the practice.
But human nature is, well, we're going to persevere anyway, and it won't happen again. It'll be fine. And of course, Roger was wrong. It was worse the next time. Hence the answer to the question.
Can I flag a question that became particularly interesting to me over something that I can't talk about? But what if the disaster or the failure is big and the cost of fixing it forever is too high? In other words, that you're not making enough money in the business to be able to afford to fix it 100%. What on earth are you going to do then? So what about the money? Should you be closing down and going out of business altogether because you cannot ensure that the same problem won't happen again?
That's a very good question. I think...
Now, I put you on the spot, well, so I think, in fairness, I should give you time to think.
I can see that you could continue in business, but then you have to have this rider every time you take that a similar piece of business on. You have to have this disclaimer almost that says you will pay your money and the end result is not guaranteed. The thing you want at the end, I can't guarantee will actually get there because there's a chance. Now, that's fine if you're trying to shuttle people to Mars. I think you can well have a disclaimer in there early on saying, look, this is early space travel to Mars and you're among the first passengers. You could die.
Thanks, Roger. However, we can't guarantee that you will die.
Yeah.
However, and because we haven't got enough money to ensure you won't die, we're going to put in something cheaper. And we guarantee you that we'll have our fingers crossed.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be cheaper. I mean, that's another discussion.
Well, I'm using cheaper for less expensive.
but you see what I mean? I mean, so you're into the realms then of adding a disclaimer. Now, would that work? Could you attract business by saying, we do this brilliant thing, it's fantastic. When it works, it's fantastic, it's amazing. 5 times out of 10, it doesn't really work. It's like launching a satellite into space. That occasionally goes wrong. But of course, you can get insurance for that. So can you get insurance to cover the failure of you not delivering? But I don't think that's the kind of scenario you're really talking about, is it?
No, because if I have insurance, it'll mean that in the event of my death through the rocket exploding, my family will be fine. So indeed, my family have an interest in me having the insurance. But I actually don't have much interest in it myself. But I want to take us back to the most recent episode of Business Jazz, which is up on our website. And there was a man, then we told the story, there was a man who was going to Vancouver. And he contacted two of the businesses on which he was dependent. Now, in the last episode of Business Jazz, we spoke mainly of the business that had damaged its brand so much in my eyes that I'll never be flying across the Atlantic with them again. The other company had replied in a way that wasn't as unacceptable, but neither was it 100% acceptable, and it left the possibility open that they couldn't guarantee that they would deliver your bags to Vancouver. And that meant that they had a get-out clause. Now, they could, of course, have guaranteed that your bags would get to Vancouver. All they had to do to guarantee your bags would get to Vancouver is apply your bag to a passenger and remove a few seats at the back of the plane and have the person sit there looking after your... In other words, they would easily have been able to get it there. They would, of course, not been able to fly the plane on the grounds that, unless you were prepared to buy half a dozen seats on their airplane. But there's a situation where Aer Lingus were not able to guarantee that they would get your bags to Vancouver.
And it wasn't even so much the bags getting to Vancouver. It was the would I need in Heathrow to go through... collect my bags, go through customs, check in again, and check my bag in, go through security again, all of those things. Just as a follow-up to that.
Did they answer that question satisfactorily?
No, they gave a brilliant answer, and then the very last sentence you might remember was, unless this isn't the case.
Oh, my God. Well, look, the issue is, will you have to collect your bags off the aeroplane, the Aer Lingus aeroplane, and carry them yourself to the other airplane? Why on earth couldn't they have given an unambiguous yes or no? I mean, that's a fact as opposed to
it
a
is.
Service.
No, but just to complete the picture, a third party has now been involved in this information gathering process. I went onto the Heathrow website, and it has this brilliant function where you can key in your inbound flight and your departing flight, the two terminals, or the terminals that you're going to arrive at. Well, actually, just key in the flight number, and it will tell you how to transfer. Now, that is quite remarkable. It tells you the steps that you need to go through to transfer from one plane to the other, how long it will take, and how much time you have.
So you can put the two flights in. This is the one I'm coming in on. This is the one I'm going out on.
Yep.
Well, to be honest, in this day and age, I would have expected that. I mean, any airport, it's a simple piece of software, I assume, and that is absolutely essential information.
But it was written clearly in relatively warm language, so that was very useful. What is going to be interesting, it says, you will need 60 minutes for this transfer. You have 65 minutes. So that flight had better not be 5 minutes late.
Or else you better not go to the toilet in between the two
flights.
Certainly can't stop and buy any duty-free goods in our shop.
Well, Anne, my wife, pointed out that, of course, they're taking into account that you're a shuffling old pensioner who is going to take their time to... Well, we'll need to take their time. So not somebody like me who, believe you me, when I go through an airport, I go through an airport as quickly as I can, just because I'm anxious to get where I need to be. So they will have accounted a level of that.
So we're giving a big thumbs up to the Heathrow website.
I think so. I mean, there's useful information. One thing they didn't do is they didn't explain to me why I have to go through security again and why I have to have my hand luggage checked again. But look, it's there. I know it's coming now. I know I need to do it. Security at Heathrow these days is actually pretty quick with the new systems they put in. So it'll be fine.
Okay, now we're not here to... purpose of this podcast is not so much to fly the flag and say, you know, fly through Heathrow, but it's actually to emphasize the importance, apart from anything else, of really good, clear information presented in a user-friendly way, human language. And if you want to know where that has been achieved, do what Roger suggests, go to the Heathrow website. And if you want to know how it hasn't been achieved, email us for a copy of the Air Canada email which was sent to Roger, we will show you.
We should put it up in the show notes. That's where it should go.
We should put the
businessjazz.net.
Have we already sent the CEO?
Because
I sent the last episode that we have up by Twitter to Air Canada. Now, it would be wrong to assume that the person in the call centre dealing with the Twitter for Air Canada, as soon as they see this come up, is going to pick up the phone and phone the CEO, whose name I found out, and say, we have a very interesting tweet in here that we want you to see personally. Can you come down here or shall we bring it to you?
I like the shall we bring it to you, because it leaves no option. You are seeing this tweet regardless. Now you can choose to come down and see it, or we will camp outside your office until you we catch you. I hope that the tweet was polite. Well, I'll find out. If I suddenly find that I've been bumped off this flight, then I'll know that the tweet you sent wasn't polite.
Oh, the tweet was purely informational. I don't think we said, or I wouldn't be inclined to say anyway, whatever you do, don't fly Air Canada, and here's why. I would not go that far at all.
Good. Well, but here's also the other thing. I mean, this is one person's experience. Because there may be thousands of people listening to this podcast who are now storming the gates of businessjazz.net in defence of Air Canada, who have been so amazing to them in their travel experience that they will not stand for some snotty-nosed podcaster in Ireland complaining about an email that he got.
Well, you know why the Air Canada email was phrased in that term? Is that they decided, as soon as they saw your booking, we don't really want him to be on the flight. So the brief was given to their PR people. Would you kindly draft a very special one-off email, which we wouldn't dream of sending to anybody else, and send it to Roger Overall, so that as soon as he saw it, he would be inclined to switch to our competitor.
Yeah, we're not having this beardy git on our flight. I feel honoured. They do that for me, just such a unique experience, just for me. That makes me feel special.
Good, you're having this entire podcast focused on you and your experiences. Let us see, Roger, where are we going next, as a matter of interest, you know? We've been dealing with catastrophes. Are there any more catastrophes you can think of? I have one, which is the what happens if an oil tanker spills a whole load of oil and damages half of the Arctic? And how do you recover from that?
Well, that we only have 4.5 minutes to touch on that topic. And of course, that's
that
a topic
the
I can...
Exxon Valdez?
I can speak at length about that sort of thing, because that's the business I used to be in, and we used to help people and train them for that exact eventuality.
Okay, you're in you're in a lift, you're in an elevator, right? You're pitching to somebody.
Now, we know I'm bad at elevators and pitching.
A new television program that you want to host, right? You've got 2 minutes to tell them the program that you want to make about the Exxon Valdez, and you only have 2 minutes, and the person is definitely getting out, and we're just closing the doors. Zunk. Now you're trapped.
Well, here's the thing about the Exxon Valdez and any oil spill. Millions and millions and millions is pumped into cleanup. Do you know the best thing you could probably do in that situation?
Now, you're going to tell me the best thing to do is do nothing. Let the sea clean it up.
Let the sea clean it up. Now, you've got the wildlife. That's an issue. Blimey. I think the lift has stalled. But, now, this is information based on what I knew over 10 years ago. But research did show that if you do nothing, that's better than having oil. And then what do you throw on top of this oil? All kinds of chemicals and stuff. This is quite spiteful stuff in its own right. This isn't lovely, benign. You're not throwing ice cream on the oil. You're throwing these quite potent chemicals. So in a way, you're adding to the pollution that's going into the sea. By the way, oil being a natural compound, if you like. Look, it doesn't belong in the sea. I'm not saying it should be in the sea, but it is something that is of the world. It is of nature. All these chemicals we're tossing on top of it isn't. It's stuff that we've created. It's all synthetic. So there is an argument that says, look, it's not nice. The oil doesn't belong in the water. It's bad for the wildlife, but don't throw the chemicals on it. Harvest as much as
you
can.
Hold on, you're getting much too technical, and we're not here to teach people how you should clean up an oil spill. What I really think is the big question is, given that the public will go bananas if nothing is done about it, mm-hmm. given that there is scientific evidence, or whatever you'd call it, to say that the do-nothing option is the best, how to communicate that in a way to the public, in a way that will persuade the public that you're behaving responsibly. And that could be for a future episode of Business Jazz, because that would be all about how to communicate a really, really difficult message in a highly attractive way, which also means persuasive way. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear you on that topic.
Well, I have a minute and a half. One, be seen to be doing something. So you are cleaning up the oil that you can harvest up. One. Two, do what you can for the wildlife that's been affected. Three, I think there is an element of education involved. Yes, you can say, you must admit we made a mistake, however it happened. It's also very rare for this to happen, but it did happen in this particular case. People forget the number of days that without an oil spill incident. And the other thing is, I wonder about the room that there is in a very nice way, not pointing the finger, but to say to people, why do you think we're transporting oil in the first place?
And Roger, with that, as your best advice, I refuse to debate it, although I am absolutely incensed.
Incensed at the suggestion.
I am convinced that you are leading as a company, since you're saying, why do we transport it? You're about to justify transporting it in ships that are not fit for purpose. And that's my suspicion.
Ah.
Because otherwise, how come the tanker spilt its load?
Is it to do with the tanker? Is the tanker not fit for purpose? Or was it human error? Was there a storm? We haven't sketched the situation.
I never
There's
heard
also
how the Exxon Valdez managed to spill Did it run into an iceberg?
I think that... Now, I have to be really careful here.
Yes.
But I think... Okay. No, I'm not going to... I won't say it, just in case I'm completely wrong. But let's just say...
Well, I'll tell you why it did. Now, this is not widely known.
Right.
It was actually a meteorite that fell to Earth, and it's been covered up because it got through all the defences, and it was regarded as more important to distract people by the oil spillage than to tell them that an oil tanker was actually hit by a meteor. Now, that is not widely known. That has been covered up.
Well, I had heard that rumour. you've been listening to the wildly off-topic business jazz. If you have thoughts, and who doesn't have thoughts about oil spills, please let us know. Get in touch. businessjazz.net. That's where you'll find the show notes. Paul,
and by the way, an experiment. Please pour olive oil into your sink and try to clean it up by any means other than the way in which Roger cleaned it up or suggested that it be cleaned up. That could be done at home as a little project for children at school.
What you could do...
Shouldn't we finish the podcast?
Well, you should, but this is a... You know, I'd use lemon. That's a natural product as well. Anyway, Business Jazz. You can find out more about Business Jazz and how to clean up oil spills, be they in your back garden, in your kitchen, or indeed out at sea, at businessjazz.net.
Yes, businessjazz.net is to be found on the internet.
On the internet. Thank you very much for listening.
And from Republic of Work this week, thank you very much for listening. And we'll be back again next week with a new episode. And we promise that next week we will not criticize any major companies unless they approach us and ask them to focus on them.